Blog Talk Radio.
Exposing the lies.
The lies.
Shattering the consensus. Highlighting the hypocrisy. Global Cooling Radio with Mark Gillar.
Welcome to Global Cooling Radio. My guest today is Dr. Patrick Michaels. He is the past president of the American Association of State Climatologists. He was also a research professor of environmental science at the University of Virginia for 30 years and is a contributing author and reviewer to the UN IPCC's report, according to what I'm looking at here on your bio. In addition to that, you are also the author of Climate of Extremes, Meltdown, and the editor of Shattered Consensus. Dr. Michaels, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing real good. Listen, I am so glad to have a real climate scientist on the show today because I need your help interpreting some things. With ClimateGate coming out, for example, being a layperson, I was looking into some of those emails, and when I saw I used Mike's nature trick to hide the decline, I thought it meant that somebody was doing something underhanded and they were pulling something kind of sneaky, but I understand now that a trick is, within scientific circles, just a really clever way of doing something. So help me out with that. Is that a word that you guys throw around all the time, trick? You pull tricks to make the science work?
No. The problem here was it's well known that tree rings, which are used as proxies for temperatures when you don't have thermometers, don't really reproduce recent temperatures very well. And you should ask yourself how well they reproduce past temperatures if they don't reproduce recent ones very well. But what hide the decline meant was to scrub off the tree ring data. In the case of Mark Briffa's tree ring set from the University of East Anglia from 1960 onwards, and replace it with observed temperature data. Otherwise, it would look like the temperature wasn't really rising as much as the thermometers indicate that it is. Now, a lot of scientists will tell you that splicing real data onto measured by thermometers, as opposed to proxy temperatures measured by tree rings, and they are highly inaccurate, putting them on the same chart is really misleading. But that's what was done.
I see. Now, speaking of tree rings being misleading, it's my understanding that other things can cause tree rings to widen. For example, a wet environment or perhaps increased CO2 levels. Is that
correct? Oh, yeah. It's well known that the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere itself is responsible for widening some tree ring records. This is particularly true at high elevation, where many of the real old tree ring records come from, the bristlecone pines out west. And, this whole thing about hiding the decline and the apparent disparity between the tree rings and the temperatures, if you read the ClimateGate emails, some people are really, really discomforted by this and uncomfortable with this, but they go forward. And they try and smash all the opposition. They don't send working scientists raw data that's required to reproduce experiments. It just really left a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Well, Dr. Michaels, why should they send you their data if you're just trying to find something wrong with it?
Yeah, that's the lead-in to my book, Climate of Extremes. That's an email sent by Phil Jones, who's the director of the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia and is currently undergoing a whitewashing. Warwick Hughes from Australia requested his raw climate data because he wanted to figure out how the errors were calculated in it, mm-hmm. 0.6 plus or minus 0.2. He wanted to figure out where the plus or minus came from. And he was refused the data repeatedly. And Jones wrote back to him, quote, "We have 25 years or so invested in the work. Why should I make the data available to you when your aim is to try and find something wrong with it?" Well, in fact, it should be the aim of every scientist to try and find something wrong with the work of every other scientist. That's the way the system works. That's how progress is achieved. Instead, stonewalling, saying if they ever find out that there's a FOIA law in Virginia, the United Kingdom, I'm going to destroy the file. Asking other people to destroy their files pertaining to reviews of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports and under the subject matter FOIA, IPCC and FOIA. That's the kind of stuff that's in these emails.
Well, you know, again, I'm just a layperson, but one of the things that just jumped out at me while we were speaking is if these people are trying to show a correlation between CO2 levels and temperature, wouldn't it be smart to pick a form of proxy data that isn't sensitive to CO2 levels?
That's true. But trees grow around the world. They're kind of easy to find. There are other proxy records that we have. Every proxy record that you find has something in it that really isn't temperature or really isn't rainfall or really isn't what you think where it is. For example, we look at the ratio of 018 to 016 in snow to determine the temperature at which the moisture condensed that ultimately formed the snow crystal. Except the problem is that this is the temperature at the point at which it condensed. Now, how far away do you think that is from where the snow is? How big are clouds? How far do they travel in one day? This moisture droplet could be in there for 500 miles, for 1,000 miles. You don't know at all exactly where it's from. And the climate, you know, of 1,000 miles away from here is quite a bit different than it is here, I assure you.
Hmm. Well, I've heard that people that used to look at the surface station data don't have a problem with that. Oftentimes they're approximating, aren't they, based on a station that's many miles away?
Ross McKittrick and I, he's Canadian, we're referred to as M&M. There are two M&Ms. There's McIntyre and McKittrick. They're the guys who took apart the hockey stick.
Right.
That's the tree-ring proxy record that doesn't do very much for 900 years and then suddenly shoots up like a hockey stick blade. And the other M&M is McKittrick and Michaels. And we're the guys who took apart the surface temperature record in the following way. Let me ask you a question, Mark. Have you ever,
okay.
I don't know if you noticed, have you ever seen a weather station out in the country, what they look like? They look like they're a white box on stilts.
Right.
Okay.
I've seen them.
And they're painted white so that they reflect away most solar radiation so that the inside is very much like almost like the shade of a tree. And imagine what happens if the box gets darkened, if it gets really dirty or whatever, or the paint peels or something like that. It absorbs more radiation. And so the temperature inside the box becomes warmer when it's really not warmer. Now, I ask you this, how far up on the economic priority totem pole in the country of Chad do you think keeping the weather station painted white is?
I would think that some of the things at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs might take priority.
Correcto. Correcto. Now, what we found was, this should shock you, shouldn't shock you, in general, the poorer the country, the more warming there was in their weather station records that didn't correspond to warming measured by satellites over the same region. In other words, the satellites weren't measuring the warming that was being measured in these poor country weather stations. And as a result, you know, we concluded that as much as half of the warming that's in the land record since at least 1979 was spurious, wasn't really climatic warming. Now, before you get too upset, remember land's only 30% of the Earth's surface, and this type of error could not intrude upon sea surface temperature records. They have their own problems. Okay, it turns out, for example, that a guy by the name of Thompson and the junior author was none other than Phil Jones from the Climatic Research Unit, published a paper in Nature 2 years ago, in which they said, you know, we measured the sea surface temperatures too cold from 1940 through the mid-1960s. In other words, that the rate of warming or the observed amount of warming between 1950 and now is less than we said it was. because we started it off colder back there in the mid-20th century. And then they taught, and if you think those records have been corrected to show this, you're wrong. They have not. You can read about it in the ClimateGate emails. They didn't want to. They did correct their records fairly frequently, about once a year. They were absolutely in no hurry to correct the record so it showed less warming from 1950 to now. And they talk about it in ClimateGate. They say, basically, yeah, we'll get around to it sometime. Yeah, sometime we'll put it in. I don't know about now, but sometime we'll put it in. Of course, all they're trying to do is to put it in after the world comes to some irrevocable agreement on carbon dioxide, which they all thought was going to happen at Copenhagen in December. Well, guess what happened? Their emails got spilled 3 weeks before Copenhagen, and that was the end of that.
Timing is everything.
Timing is everything. You know, U.S. people, 48% in the latest Gallup poll agreed with the statement that global warming is real and caused by human beings, but is exaggerated by scientists. The last time Gallup asked that one, they only got 31%. So people have caught on. Thanks to people like you, thanks to the internet, which the legacy media just cannot counter, no matter how hard they try. People are looking at the internet for their news. It took the legacy media 3 weeks in the United States to acknowledge that ClimateGate existed. While if you Googled ClimateGate, you got 30 million hits. I mean, think about it. These guys are just behind the power curve. And they've lost it on global warming, and they are dang desperate right now. That's why Greenpeace is putting out threats now on people like me. You probably saw that.
I did see that, and I was going to say that one of the things I was going to ask you about, again, being a non-scientist, when I read through some of the ClimateGate emails, one that really caught my attention, and I think you know which one I'm going to be bringing up, was the one where Ben Santer would be very tempted to beat the crap out of you at the next climate meeting. Now, again, being a non-scientist, I'm thinking – he wants to beat the crap out of you at the next meeting.
He does.
What does that mean?
He does. He's got anger management problems. He needs an anger management course. That's what he needs. It's not just him. You see, he published a paper in 1996 in Nature magazine in which it showed a remarkable correspondence between predictions of computer models and observed temperatures in the three-dimensional atmosphere, meaning in the weather balloon data, from 1963 through 1987. And I thought, wow, this is really bizarre, because the data begins in 1957 and ended in 1995. So where was the data from 57 through 63, and where was the data from 88 through 95? And when I put those in, the entire relationship fell apart. The result just vanished, so that the data that was selected gave the result they wanted. And when I presented this at the American Meteorological Society meeting in Long Beach in 1997, Ben Santer was there, and he was sitting next to somebody in the audience talking about what a jerk Pat Michaels was, and God, this guy is stupid, not realizing this guy was my co-author and that he gave up to give the second half of the paper. He stood up. Anyway, and so the paper is done, and a guy by the name of Tim Barnett from Scripps, I think Tim's just done some absolutely terrific work. I really, really idolize, past tense, Tim, because I stuck out my hand to shake his hand, and this guy who's much bigger than me, standing there next to Ben Santer, says, if you ever give that talk again, I'm going to wrap that microphone cord around your neck. And I got witnesses, okay? I can't say it on the radio. Yeah, I got witnesses on that one. So there is a certain very mean streak amongst the global warming extremists that shows up under the slightest provocation. And another thing that you'll notice if you explore this issue, the people who say the world is not coming to an end from global warming while saying that human beings are having some warming, let's call these guys the lukewarmers, okay?
Okay.
The lukewarmers tend to have very good senses of humor. Because they know that nobody has the final word, and that we can't all claim that we know the truth. None of us really know the truth. The apocalyptic warmers are so thin-skinned that they threaten to beat you up. They threaten to sue at the drop of a hat. I mean, it's really – it's unbelievable. You can read all about it in the emails.
Oh, and also James Cameron wants to call all the deniers out in the middle of the street and shoot out at high noon.
Yeah,
so,
well
I'm just looking at this stuff, and you know, also on Greenpeace, there's been this post in the last week.
Yeah.
We know who you are. We know where you live. We know where you work. And again, the provocation seems to consist only of saying, hey, yes, CO2 causes some warming, but it's certainly not going to send.
Well, I took out an insurance policy against that. I bought a hybrid car.
Ah.
See, they never
like
blow
it.
Up a hybrid car. Oh, no, we can't blow up the hybrid.
paint it green, you'd be especially safe.
I bought that car in 2000. I was ahead of the curve.
Oh, man, absolutely. So, no, a lot of people who don't necessarily buy into the doom and gloom.
Thanks.
Yeah, or you know, the thing I hate is that whenever you tell someone that you don't necessarily support Al Gore's view, the first thing that comes back is, well, then you don't care about clean air and you don't care about clean water and you know, you're this anti-environmentalist, and it seems like people expect you to be on one side or the other. Either you don't care about pollution, you don't care about clean water, or you support Al Gore completely. And I think
The issue is remarkably polarized into people who say it's the end of the world, and if you don't believe with us, then you know you're a criminal, or you're guilty of thought crime, and especially if you go on radio or television and say you don't believe with us, we'll really come after you. We know who you are. We know where you live. God, what childish junk Greenpeace puts out. Anyway, and then there's the other side. The people who say that there's no such thing as global warming. That's wrong, too. And they get incensed at people like me who say, well, actually, there really is. You know, it's warmer than it was, and people do have something to do with it. I'm not so sure they have done the majority of the warming. There are other factors involved, but they do have something to do with it. And then the other side hates you. But at least they don't threaten, say, we're going to come into your house and do bad things to you or whatever these guys said. By the way, Greenpeace pulled that off their website.
I saw that, yeah.
And with a very cheap excuse that it was taken out of context. It was not taken out of context. It's never going to get out of cyber world, even if they took it off. And I think they ought to understand that they are under a tremendous legal liability and suspicion right now if anyone gets hurt.
Well, I noticed that they said that anybody that knows – was this guy's name Phil also? That made the remark anyway. They said anybody who knows him knows that he's a very nice, peaceful guy and he wouldn't hurt anybody and
Bull.
He was taken out of context. Yeah,
no, Bull.
So.
First of all, he didn't – first of all, this guy, Adith, or whatever his name is in England, in India, did not put it up. It was put up by someone else, and it was approved by someone who knows whom. But it's there, and he can't get it out of cyber world. And I would like to know why Janet Napolitano, the National Homeland Security person, is not investigating this as a terrorist threat against innocent citizens. I want to know why she's not.
It's interesting the things that this administration chooses to go after and not go after. I mean, there was also
that one's a little blatant. It's basically saying, for your beliefs, we're gonna harm you. I mean, if that's not denial of civil rights, I don't know what's going on in this country.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I think expecting that out of this administration might be a bit too much, though.
You know, if this administration actually did something about that one, they might make a few brownie points and diffuse some of the animosity towards it. They ought to think about it.
Well, speaking of this administration, one of the things that this administration would love to push through on the heels of the healthcare bill success is a cap and trade bill of some sort. Of course, they're not going to call it that. Talk to us, if you will, about what types of changes to the average mom-and-pop American we will see in this country if the cap-and-trade bill, or a cap-and-trade bill similar to what's been proposed, actually makes it through.
Why don't you say a cap-and-trade bill similar to the one that was passed already by the House of Representatives goes through the Senate?
Well, sure.
And you're going to ask me, how much does that cost, and what's that going to do?
Right.
Done your taxes recently? I'll give you the answer. Ready? This page intentionally left blank. No one knows.
Gotcha.
Zero. No one knows. Look, the Waxman-Markey bill reduces the average carbon dioxide emissions allowed to the average American to the value that the average American could emitted in 1867. I didn't say 1967, did I? I said 1867.
No.
If you think anyone has a clue as to how to reduce our per capita CO2 emissions to what they were at the end of the Civil War, please stand up and tell everybody. The fact of the matter is that no one knows. But it's a reduction in emissions of 83%. Now, a couple years ago, gasoline got to $4 a gallon. You know how much we reduced our consumption? 4%. So how many dollars does a gallon of gasoline have to cost to reduce your consumption by 83%?
A lot.
I mean, I heard this stuff coming out from in the debate over the House bill that some people said, it's the cost of a postage stamp per day. Well, I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah.
A postage stamp's worth of gasoline ain't going to get me very far.
Well, it's funny because I actually saw one of the places that came out, and Katie Couric was doing this incredible softball interview of Al Gore, and it's still posted on CBS. It's still up there on the CBS website, and you can find it on my website as well. And one of the things she actually did in a token effort to ask a tough question was say, you know, Mr. Gore, according to figures coming out of the Congressional Budget Office, if cap and trade passes, the average American is going to spend about an additional $1,600 a year just for electricity. And in that way that Al has, he responded by saying, well, Katie, that's about a postage stamp a day. And I don't know how much he's paying for his postage stamps or sending everything to press mail.
Yeah, well, that's not quite true.
I'll be sure and send you that video. Now, one of the things I want to get to, because I received an extremely nasty email today saying that I was basically a shill for big oil and for
That's the usual.
Coal. Yeah, and frankly, that you were too. There's this whole thing about Koch Industries that's hit the news.
Coke.
Coke Industries that's hit the news in the last week. And everybody is just saying, okay, that's it. All the deniers are being bought off by Koch Industry. And, you know, we've known this for years that it's either ExxonMobil or some other big group that's doing this. Now we know the money behind it, so you can't believe anything that a denier has to say.
The amount of money that Coke and Exxon are putting out, first of all, very little of it is directly related to climate change work. But if you compare that amount of money to what the federal government puts out on this subject in order to propagandize its point of view, in order to support what it uses to create its documents, I once calculated that the ratio was 10,000 to 1. In other words, for every $1 that, quote, industry spends on this, the government spends 10,000. And they still can't win the argument. And then when they lose the argument, they blame the party that only spent $1 compared to them.
Well, now, wait a minute. Government money is clean money, right? It doesn't come with any strings attached.
You're right. Government money is money expropriated by law from the citizens of this United States. Oil company money is money expropriated when the citizens volunteered to buy gasoline. I mean, the slight difference between the two. You know, people always crab at me because of industry funding. And I will tell you, that's much more honestly gotten gains than taking other people's money, isn't it?
I would think so.
Yeah?
Again, a lot of people don't feel that way. They look at it.
Fine.
And say, well, industry money.
Everybody on
money.
The dole. Why should all scientists be on the dole? To keep them honest? The dole's not honest. To stay on the dole, you have to do what the dole says to do. Unless they think that that the Dole has no plans, no programs, no ideas that they overarching ideas that they want to see go forward.
My thought on all of this is that they're always going to find an excuse to try to discredit the deniers. But there's one thing that I don't hear when they try to discredit you guys, and that's science. Every one of you is on the take. Every one of you is being funded by coal or oil or whatever. But when I hear
well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. I want to do research. Do you expect me to go to the government for a grant? Do you think they're going to give me money to do research?
I would think not.
Okay, fine. So end of story. You know? I mean, I guess I could. I guess their idea is that if you can't if you've peed off the government so much by showing where it fudges things and how it exaggerates things, then you don't deserve to be funded scientifically. That's just nonsense. And you don't deserve to have a career.
I'm wondering why nobody sees a conflict with the fact that most people in government, whether they're a Republican or a Democrat, likes the idea of government being big, likes the idea of government growing, and yet we have the government throwing billions at this particular environmental boogeyman known as anthropogenic global warming. They're throwing this money at scientists who come back and say the answer is to tax more and grow government more. I mean, is that not a conflict of interest? Let's take a look at what happened in the 2008 election. We had General Electric throwing all three of their network stations behind Barack Obama, who had promised to sign any cap and trade bill that hit his desk, which once signed would mean billions for whom? General Electric.
Well, here's another quote from a famous scientist at Stanford. We are ethically bound to the scientific method, in effect promising to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but. On the other hand, we're not just scientists, but human beings as well. And like most people, we'd like to see the world's a better place, which in this context translates into our working to reduce the risk of potentially disastrous climate change. To do that, we have to get some broad-based public support to capture the public's imagination. That, of course, entails getting loads of media coverage. So what we have to offer up are scary scenarios, make simplified dramatic statements, and make little mention of any doubts we might have. This double ethical bind that we frequently find ourselves in cannot be solved by any formula. Each of us has to decide what the right balance is between being effective and being honest. I hope that means being both. That last sentence didn't get that guy off the hook. He said, we got to get loads of media coverage, scare the bejesus out of people, and decide how effective we want to be versus being honest and telling people that we really don't know that much. That guy is Steve Schneider at Stanford University, who once had the gall, as the editor of the journal Climate Change, to reject a paper of mine saying that my paper had to be held to a higher standard of review. Because it was a, quote, counter-paradigm paper. Wait a minute. This is 1989. This guy is defining the paradigm of climate change? Huh? This is 1989. This paper says, yeah, if we make a proxy calculation for upper air data, it looks like it might have been as warm in the 1930s as it was in the 1980s, which is not shocking. That's a counter-paradigm paper we're going to keep from publishing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
at the same year that he's writing me this letter, he's saying that in public we have to offer up scary scenarios and make little mention of any doubts we might have. Now, if that's what you're going to do in public, do you have a vested interest in making sure that the scientists who submit articles to your journal do not get articles in those journals that do not offer up scary scenarios? Of course.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Of course. This is a scandal. Nobody's ever talked about this.
What I want to do is we've got about 30 official seconds left, and we're going to be off the air. But whenever people listen to the archives, and frankly about 90% of the listenership comes from the archives, they're going to be able to hear everything we say once we've gone over. So we're going to hear the show end in about 24 seconds. But if you don't mind, I'd like to hold you over for just a few more minutes because I'd like to stick to this scary scenario subject line that we're on. Do you have a couple of extra minutes for us?
About five.
Okay, we can do it. Fantastic. Now, and the show's about to come to an end, and then we're going to go five over, and that'll be for you listeners out there. Bonus footage if you tune in to the archives at markgillard.com. Okay, the show is no longer streaming, but this will appear in the archive. You talked about scary scenarios, and one of the things that got me, Dr. Michaels, is that this is the one debate that I've seen where people on one side say, hey, by the way, we just want you to know we're going to be exaggerating.
Okay? No, well,
because was it Sir John Houghton that said something along the lines of, unless we announce disaster, no one will listen? And then Al Gore himself said, you know, I believe it's okay to have an overrepresentation of the facts so that, you know, it'll gain the proper attention, I believe is what he said. I mean, this is one side saying, we're going to lie. We're going to lie. We're going to exaggerate. And
well, but
the media doesn't care.
It doesn't matter. The chickens have come home to roost. As we mentioned earlier, the new Gallup poll shows that 48% of respondents now agree with the statement that global warming is real, caused by human beings, and exaggerated by scientists, all three of those statements being chained together. They couldn't get away with it forever. And that's why – that's a huge block of people, because the remaining 52% have a whole bunch of different points of view. It's not like they're allied against that 48%. And if you think about the election demographics, when a group that large thinks that scientists and the political process are exaggerating this issue, anybody who runs on the basis of a cap and tax system, which is what it is, you cap the amount of carbon that can be emitted, and you trade the permits from emitter to from non-emitter to emitter. The emitter has to pay. The emitter has to charge the people who use his or her goods and services. That's a hidden tax. Or a direct carbon energy tax, which is the alternative that is being floated right now in Washington, D.C. Or a value-added tax because we have spent all this money. These things are not playing well with the public, okay? And they see cap and trade, and they just go nuts right now. So I'm not expecting that to pass the Senate, because if it did, the damage that it would the Senate and the sitting House members from conservative districts would take would be enormous.
Well, I think anybody that's interested in maintaining their political career would be smart to stay away from this one. We were talking about scary scenarios, and one of the things that's disgusted me from the get-go is the way Team Green has no problem scaring the bejesus out of little kids. I have on my website a picture that I took off Tree Hugger, Pat, and it is a picture of a little girl standing on a block of ice with a noose around her neck, with the idea being when global warming melts the ice, the little girl dies. I mean, we've seen the Build-A-Bear people use Santa Claus to try to scare little kids about global warming. So it's not surprising when we see studies cropping up in the UK that indicate that children are having sleep disorders due to fears and concerns over global warming. Is there nothing that these people won't do?
No, this will also come back to haunt them. I would imagine, knowing, you know, being an amateur psychologist, but a real parent, that when you falsely proselytize children, they usually turn against the belief as they grow up, and so this is not going to stand.
Well, I know as a young person back in the 70s, I would turn on the Saturday morning cartoons, and we always had, I believe it was Christopher Guest, who would do the In the News segment, and at that time we were told the Ice Age was coming, and it seems like no matter what direction the thermometer is going, according to the environmental extremist, it's always the wrong direction.
Well, it's not just that. It's not what direction the thermometer is going, what direction anything is going. And by the way, I will make a prediction for you that I believe will stand.
That
we are about to flip away from global warming. Do you remember acid rain?
Sure.
Yeah, but I had to remind you of it, didn't I? Because it's no longer going to be the end of the forest or anything like that. And global warming is no longer going to be the end of the world. So we need a replacement apocalypse. And and coming out of the apocalypse bullpen, I've seen her warming up. She's got a mean throw, is ocean acidification. Okay?
Wow.
That carbon dioxide, well, we don't know about warming, but we know that it makes the ocean more acid. The oceans are going to die. Okay?
Mm.
And then we're all going to die. I mean, this community of apocalyptic environmentalists needs money, and therefore they need a viable apocalypse. And why? I mean, it's gone from population, you know, the population bomb, we're all going to run out of food, we're all going to run out of air. I don't know if you remember that one.
No.
That was Paul Ehrlich, yes. By now we would be out of air. then we were going to be out of trees, Waldenstrube, forest death in Germany. Oh, my God. That was acid rain. And then we were all going to turn into little green or little gray irradiated things. You forgot about the ozone hole, okay? And then we're all going to die from global warming. Well, next, the oceans are going to die. Trust me, that's the next one.
If you'll pardon me, you forgot killer bees.
Yeah, killer bees always were just about to come over the U.S.-Mexican border.
I'm in Texas.
Instead, it turned out to be waves of people. The bees couldn't make it, but the people do.
Yeah, and I also noticed.
But you know what it is? Bees don't know a better economic life.
Well, I got to tell you, it's been fun watching all this. I mean, you've got people like Gillian Anderson, and the Hollywood crowd always jumps on the latest cause celebs. So you've got people like Gillian Anderson, you know, who were screaming about Y2K 11 years ago.
Oh, Y2K, yes, of course. I forgot that one.
And they're now screaming about global warming. And I mean, it's amazing to me how many people take their science news from Leonardo DiCaprio or Ed Begley Jr.
News, a publication that is a very popular publication that is clearly proselytizing on global warming. Yes, go ahead.
I've now seen you go up twice against Bill Nye the Science Guy. And
oh God. I mean, I don't know why that guy likes to get beaten up so much.
I don't either. I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm saying this guy is, kind of the scientific community or the global warming scare community's version of I'm not a climate scientist, but I played one on TV. I mean, I don't get it. It is a long, long way from rubbing a couple of balloons on a fuzzy sweater and saying, look, kids, static electricity, and trying to debate a climate scientist of your stature on national television. I mean, I just don't get it. I think one of the lines he was babbling, but one of the lines I picked up when he was debating you is that he said the ClimateGate emails were all about debating methodology.
Yeah, and I think it countered back like methodology, like I've destroyed my emails to review the Air Force. Would you please do yours too under the subject heading FOIA and IPCC? That's a methodological issue. Yeah, I have to admit, the Bill Nye stuff was amazing. I'd like to tell you, Mark, that I have grown tired of shooting these very large fish in these very small barrels, but I'm just not that much of a sportsman.
Well, I see the people they're trotting out on the Team Green side. They've got Ed Begley Jr. and Bill Nye the Science Guy, and I'm wondering, where's Al Gore? Where's Michael Mann? Where's
Al Gore
Phil
won't
Jones?
Debate. Al Gore won't debate. Michael Mann is a very good debater, and I expect after Penn State exonerates him of everything, which they will very soon, he will be back out, I would hope. He is a good debater.
Yeah, that would be a good show. I'll have you and Michael Mann on. You can
We've done the show several times, and it's a draw. He's good. But for a draw for us, but you have to understand something. A draw for us is a win. Nobody's going to spend umpty squat trillion dollars on a draw.
Gotcha. Well, now, it seems like with the hockey stick being as busted up as it is, that there should be a win there. I mean, I'm a little confused. Help me out.
Well, I think that Mike and I will both agree that there's greenhouse warming, though we will dispute the amount. And we'll go from there. Yeah, I mean, I think the hockey stick is certainly sensitive to the input data, to put it mildly, and also to the reference data set to which it is referenced. which is how it got to be how it is. Mm. Anyway, but that's
short. Well, listen, Dr. Michaels, I certainly appreciate you being here today.
Sure, great fun.
I thank. Oh, absolutely. And I, again, going to say that I, being a layperson, did not quite get the, you know, what it means to want to beat the crap out of somebody, but I think I have a better understanding now.
Well,
and
if you like that email, there is an I Want to Beat Up Pat Michaels Facebook page.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, go check it out.
I'll ask our listeners to do that as well. And listen, if you need somebody to hang out with you at the next climate meeting and have your back, I mean, just
okay.
Let me know.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
I'll be there for you. Listen, once again, thanks for being on the show. I cannot tell you how pleased I am that so many of you that are so well-known and have been on so many various worldwide media are giving my little show some attention and agreeing to appear. But it's certainly gotten us off to a fast start, so thank you. And good luck with the fight. Don't give up.
All right. See you later.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.